Take your Bibles and turn to Esther. Turn to the book of Esther. We've been looking at the book of Esther and seeing God's invisible hand. Let me tell it to you again. Esther is one of the most, is the most unique book in the entire Bible because it is the only one that does not mention God at all. The closest that we come to mentioning of God is the word fasting, something that God commanded. We know that with fasting, though it's not written here, there probably was prayer involved with it also, and we'll see that tonight yet. You remember we go from the beginning of the book of Esther. Esther occurs after they decreed for God's people to be released back to from Babylon back to Israel. And now we have King Ahasuerus, Old King James, which has the correct translation of the Greek word there. You have the Greek word Xerxes, by which he's more commonly known in the newer translations. In the book of Esther, we find that this King Xerxes, he has a party. The reason he has a party is because after 6 months of partying, well, not quite, he had banquets throughout for about 6 months. And during those 6 months, it is because of what we know historically, it is probable that it was during that time that they were planning, King Nebuchadnezzar and the nations around him, planning on their revenge on Greece. Well, after the 180 days, after the 6 months, then what happened is they had a tailgate party, a pre-game party. They had a whole week having alcohol and food and whatnot. Every man's cup was specially designed for them, handmade. Of course, they're all handmade back then, but it was specially designed for each leader that way, and they used them, and they made a great hoopla. During that hoopla, Queen Vashti was summoned by the king, and he wanted to display her. The wording is not clear enough in the Hebrew, whether that display was to show off or if it was to impress everybody while she's in all of her glory and splendor, wearing only a crown. So it is unclear in the Hebrew, depending on which commentator will take one position or another. The particular commentary I used at the time was very honest. It doesn't say one way or the other. But it doesn't matter, because she didn't go anyway. So whatever reason she didn't go, she disobeyed the king, and the king was angry. And so he said, off with her. Well, he didn't off her head, but he got rid of her. He said, I don't want her here. And so he deposed her. She no longer was queen. So he goes off and fights his war. He comes back, and he says to himself, that may not have been such a good idea. So he decides that he is going to have all the virgins of all, not all the virgins, but all the beautiful virgins of all 127 provinces from the west part of India all the way into Africa, not Europe, but down into Africa, Egypt, that all those women were to be brought and to be trained and all smellied up and all gooped up, and they were to impress the king. If they did not impress the king, they would not see him again. A man, Mordecai, had a cousin, Esther. And Esther, he said, which means star, by the way, in Babylonian, actually Persian, she was told by her cousin, don't say from where, what nationality you are. Maybe a conflict of interest. So she does not. She's taken and she impresses the king. her night with the king, she impressed him to the point that he presents her as her new queen, Queen Esther. And in the course of time, what happens is Mordecai is out there, her cousin. He has an official spot, sits at the king's gate. He has some sort of official manservant or something there. And he has access to be able to communicate with Esther. It seems that in some portions that it may be direct, other times clearly indirect through servants. While the he is there, he overhears, and he hears about Bigtha and about Teresh and their plan to assassinate the king. So he gets word to Esther. And Esther says, King, some through the servants, let the king know that Mordecai says, it's just got to be a long thing of telephone. Can you imagine? Mordecai tells the servant. The servant tells Esther. Esther tells the servant. I don't know how they got it straight in the end. But warning gets to the king. And they look into it, and it is sure enough, and it's recorded into the records of the king. Haman is promoted. Haman is promoted, and Haman has a head this big, just huge. He is so proud of who he is, so that when Mordecai does not bow down and pay him the respect that he thinks he deserves, he is furious. And that anger is building up. We get over to chapter four. I forgot something very important. Don't forget it. All right. Haman, because of his anger towards Mordecai, wants to get rid of not just Mordecai, but all the Jews. So he talks to the king and says, there's a people out there in the land, and they don't have any respect for the king, and it's going to end up real bad for you. I think I've got a plan. The king says, okay, whatever, and gives him his signet ring, gives him the permission, the seal, to be able to do what he wants. And so Haman cast lots, puts a bunch of stones in a bag, shakes it up, and pulls out his plan. His plan is on the 12th month. It is the first month of the year. And on the 12th month of the year, on such and such a date, all of Persia would destroy, would annihilate all the Jews. All right, now let's get to where we're at. Mordecai tells Esther about the news, and says to her in chapter 4, he says that she may have come, who knows, in verse 14, the end of verse 14, yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this. You have to do something. And she's scared. She says, no way. If I go in there not called for, it will be off with my head. The only exception is if by the grace of God, their words would have been by the grace of the king, that the king sets forth his scepter and I am exonerated from the natural consequence of coming before the king without being called for. He says, who knows? Help will come. It'll be from someplace, but who knows? God may have put you there for this very reason. Verse 15 for tonight. Esther told them to return to this answer to Mordecai. Go gather all the Jews who are present in Shushan and fast for me. Neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. My maids and I will fast likewise, and so I will go to the king, which is against the law. And if I perish, I perish. She said, all right, put my neck on the line. Let's talk about your boldness. She was willing to sacrifice her life. I think there it shows tremendous faith. Why? Because she says, let's fast. The reason for their fasting would be to appeal to God. Verse 17, Mordecai went his way and did according to Esther all that Esther commanded. I want you to learn a verse tonight. Part of a verse. The verse is James 4:6. You got that? It's James 4:6. God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. That's the last part. The whole thing says, but he gives more grace, therefore he says, God resists the proud and gives grace to the humble. It's that last part I want you to remember. God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Jesus said it this way, whoever exalts himself will be humbled, whoever humbles himself will be exalted. Look at grace and wisdom here in the book of Esther. We read the last part of chapter 4, and she seeks God's favor by fasting. And certainly they would have been praying at the time as well. In chapter 5, verse 1, you see, it happened on the third day, Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the king's palace across from the king's house. And while the king sat on his royal throne in the royal house, facing the entrance of the house, so it was when the king saw Queen Esther that she found favor in his sight. And the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. Then Esther went near and touched the top of the scepter. You missed everything that happened there, didn't you? Let's show you here. The first is God is gracious to those who seek him. The end of chapter 4, we see they are appealing to God. In verse 2, you see God's protection. It says, so it was when the king saw Queen Esther standing in the court. You always have to pause there. It puts a dramatic effect there, kind of a cliffhanger. That she found favor in his sight. By God's grace. Remember what he did to Queen Vashti? Did he hesitate? No. There is, humanly speaking, there is absolutely nothing that would cause him to have favor on Esther. He had one wife, got rid of her, he's got another one. Nothing says he can't have another one. God protected her life that way. Not only that, look in verse 3 because you see his generosity, the king's generosity, which is God's generosity through the king. Watch it. And the king said to her, what do you wish, Queen Esther? What is your request? Here it is. It will be given to you up to half my kingdom. Man, you'd never say that to your wife, would you? You don't have that kind of grace, do you? God is very gracious. Can you think of anything under this sun that you've asked God for as by way of a want and received it? God says he will meet all your needs, right? Does he go beyond that? All the time. All the time. God is so gracious, so abundant in his blessing. It's fun to see the kids pray for stuff. Kids don't pray for wants or for needs. But they do. They do pray for needs. But mostly they pray for wants. And would you believe it's not anything on the parent's mind. Although I think that's part of the plan. But out of nowhere will come exactly what they're looking for. You've had that, haven't you? You prayed for something and you either got to the T what you wanted, or above and beyond, pressed down in good measure, overflowing. What a gracious God who not only protected her, but by his grace, through the words of the king, I give you whatever you want. Up to half the kingdom, he's got to keep hold of his stock. God not only is gracious this way, he gives wisdom. Watch what she does. Now, what would the request normally be? The request would be, I would like my people to be saved. However, you got to remember, when the law was written, it's written in the law of the Medes and Persians, to borrow from Daniel, but would have been true here. That is, it cannot be broken. You cannot ignore the law. Doesn't matter if you're president or king or whatever, you can't ignore the law. The law is what it is, and you can't say, we're just not going to abide by that law. Written in the law of the Medes and Persians, it is therefore shalt be, without any question, happen. And the law was on December 13th. That's not the right date. I'm just giving you an example. If it was January, that's roughly what it would be, okay? On December 13th, off with everybody's head, and he can't revoke that. That's the problem. And it stems from Haman. She's smart, though. She, by God's grace, is very wise. In verse 4, Esther answers, if it pleases the king, let the king and Haman come tonight to the banquet that I have, or come today to the banquet that I have prepared for him. This is happening during the day. I always picture it at night. I don't know if you do, but when I have a banquet, it's at night, right? All right, unless it's Sunday, then we have big breakfast. So our banquet's in the morning. But normally, you think of a banquet, think of it at night. This would have been during the day, actually, because we have a lot that happens before that night. She's wise. What does a king like to do? He likes a party. He likes banquets and alcohol. So what's she going to do? She's going to invite a banquet. Come on. You come down and bring Haman, too. He'll like it. Well, the king says, yeah, we're going to do that. So, finding favor in his sight, they went to the banquet. Having been to the banquet and eating and drinking and having their fill, the king says to her again, what would you like? I'll give you up to half my kingdom. I don't know. Does she chicken out? Maybe she just sensed that he wasn't liquored up enough or wasn't happy enough or whatever it was. She says, King, I invite you and Haman to come back again. I invite you and Haman to come back again tomorrow night in order to participate in another banquet. Now, he's a good man, just like if not all of us men, most of us. If there's some reason to go out to eat, we're there. That's why I attend most of the meetings I attend. Just kidding, as far as you're concerned. All right, what happens next? Well, the next thing that happens is pride and rage. Haman, in verse 9, went out that day joyful with a glad heart. Skip down to verse 10, the last part of verse 10. He went home and he sent and he called for his friends and his wife Zeresh, verse 11, and Haman told him of his great riches and the multitude of his children and all the ways in which the king has promoted him and how he advanced him above all the other officials and servants and king, and even better than that, besides, Queen Esther invited no one but me to come in with the king to the banquet that she prepared. And tomorrow I get to go again. You see what's happening here? He is so proud about who he is and what he's done. But your pride will lead to hatred. Because when having such a big head, someone doesn't do him right, he's mad. Just like a little baby almost. You know, when you take something from the little child they're not supposed to have, they get all noisy-like. Well, he, in verse 9, missed that part on purpose. The last part, Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, and that he, that is Mordecai, did not stand or tremble before him, And so Haman was filled with indignation against Mordecai. He was really mad. Nevertheless, Haman, he restrained himself and went home. You go on down in verse 13. He talked about all that he got and the queen. Verse 13, yet all that avails me nothing, all that I have is nothing, as long as that Mordecai Jew is sitting at the king's gate. Then his wife Zeresh and all his friends said, let gallows be made 50 cubits high. Now I talked last week that the gallows, we think of hanging somebody. Hangman style, right? But the preferred way of hanging somebody up there was with a stick. And so they would impale them. Here, they tell him to build it 75 feet high. If you can see, this guy is 6 feet tall. This is 75 feet high. Now, why in the world would he do that? One, because that's how high his pride was, way over his head. Haman, his wrath, caused him to take the advice of his friends and his wife and to build these gallows. And we don't have exactly why, but we know that if it was that high, I don't know if it'd be over the city wall, but certainly it would be high enough that everybody would see. And what is it that Haman wants? Well, it could be that all would see and know that they are to honor Haman, lest that happens to them. Or they would see and know that Haman has great authority. He was pretty proud of that as well. Or that they would fear Haman. That's what he wanted Mordecai to do. His pride became hatred. Pride breeds hatred. We find it in our nation too, don't we? People that are very proud, and they hear somebody say something against them, and they just get all mad because somebody said, they're all offended because you said something. Now, we can say offensive things, and we need to be careful not to say offensive things. But sometimes we say things, and people are offended, and it's nothing near what we meant. Pride causes hatred. Now, we should hate some things. Sin. We need to hate sin. God hates sin. We need to hate sin. All kinds of sin. We need to show love to others. Not excusing their sin or accepting it, but showing love to them. All the meanwhile, hating their sin. We can do that, can't we? Yeah. You do it with your kids. You hate it when your kids rebelled against you, right? Didn't do what you said? Did that mean you don't love them? No. You still loved them very much. And that's actually what caused you to hate what they were doing. Here, though, his hate is because of his pride. Be very careful that you watch out for that. Well, let's see what happens as we go on here. We find humiliation and honor as we go into into chapter 6. James chapter 4, verse 6 says, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Esther, Mordecai, and the Jews humbled themselves before God. God gave grace. Haman was very proud. God resists the proud. Watch this. King couldn't sleep, verse 1. And because he couldn't sleep, he called for the recorder to come. Imagine it this way, if you need to. You're having trouble sleeping at night, and so you go on to the church website, and you put on one of the sermons. All right? That helps you kind of get an idea of what's going on. And so the king is listening, and as he does, the recorder just happens to be reading about Mordecai. The king asked, did we do anything in reward for Mordecai? The recorder says, there's nothing recorded here. The king says, well, who's in the court? I don't know if he heard somebody in the court or if it was just a matter of, well, go see if somebody's in the court. Who's out there? And guess who it is? Haman. The king, you might recall, Haman comes in. The king asks, what should be done for the man who the king delights in to honor him? Now, Haman, he's altogether there. He knows what's happening. King wants to honor him. And so Haman comes up with what should be done. Verse 8, the royal robe be brought in which the king has worn, and a horse on which the king has ridden, the best of the clothes, the best of the horses, which is a royal crest placed on his head, a crest or crown, so a signal that he is honored by the king. Verse 9, let the robe and the horse be delivered to the hand of the one of the king's most noble princes, that he may array the man whom the king delights and honors. I thank you so much, king. And parade him on horseback through the city and the square, and proclaim before him, thus shall be done to the man whom the king delights to honor. Oh, I can't wait till tomorrow. James chapter 4 says, God resists the proud and gives grace to the humble. I want you to see the it just so happened. All right? It just so happened that the king could not sleep. It just so happened that he called for his records to be read to him instead of a glass of warm milk. It just so happened that the recorder read about Mordecai. It just so happened that the king asked if Mordecai had been rewarded for what he had done. And then it just so happened that he decides to ask whoever's in the court what should be done. And then it just so happened that Haman is in the court in order to ask to kill Mordecai, to hang him up. To string him up, as it were, although he's going to stab him up. It just so happens the king does not say who he wants to reward, and it just so happens that Haman presumes that he is to be rewarded, so he describes the lavish rewards. That's a lot of just so happens, isn't it? Do you see God's invisible hand at work there? Oh, this is a beautiful, beautiful verse. Verse 10. You could put little fireworks by it. The king said to Haman, quick, take the robe and the horse, just as you suggested. Oh, Haman's getting all excited. And do so for Mordecai the Jew who sits within the king's gate. Leave nothing undone of all the things you have spoken. You smell that? Sweet justice. God resists the proud. The proud man was now going to take the man he hated, parade him around like a servant would, and then call out, this man is all right, says the king. It's not about Haman, it's about Mordecai. Could you imagine how furious Haman had to be? Just so happened the king decreed Haman to fulfill the reward to Mordecai. Did you see, by way of a historical illustration, how God resists the proud but gives grace to the humble? Mordecai never asked for a reward. Esther, she did not go in presuming her person, presuming God's grace, they humbled themselves and sought his favor. And then she went in to the king, who by the grace of God, not stated in the text, but very carefully knowing the character of God, reading between the lines, by the grace of God, the king had favor on her. Do you see that Haman's pride brought his downfall? I can testify many of times of getting big-headed and quickly humbled. I bet you could too. You're pretty proud that you accomplished something. Just to stumble in front of everybody and make a fool of yourself. I mean that literally. I've done it more than once. Not trying to be all big-headed, but I was pretty glad of what I accomplished. You need to be reminded sometimes who to give glory to. That pride will produce rage if you hold on to it, if you let it fester. When you're proud, you'll be humiliated one way or another. When you're humble, God will honor you. That honor may not come while you're here on this earth, but you know you have reward in heaven. This evening, I hope that you've seen that God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. James 4:6. Remember it. Father, I thank you so much that you are God, and you have to remind us at times that you deserve the glory. I ask that you would help us live with humble hearts towards you, so that in the end, you get the glory. Father, we do not even seek the honor that you give. Our goal is to glorify you. Father, help us remember that. And dear God, when we are proud, we thank you for the very humiliating circumstances that you give to us. Times of embarrassment or failure, because it draws our heart back to you. So thank you. Father, I ask now your blessing upon us this night. I ask that you would help us in the week to come, that we might remember that you are God, that you resist the proud, but give grace to the humble. In Jesus' name.